Hey guys, welcome back to Tech Intern. Today we have a really exciting episode. I'm actually sitting down with Gaurav Sen, who has a YouTube channel, it's a very popular YouTube channel where he does competitive programming and he also does some design interview questions. And there's actually just a lot of resources there. So we're really excited to have him on the show today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for having me.
So today I just want to kind of go over some of the things that I saw on your YouTube channel that I thought would really benefit my listeners, something that I'd never really gotten into before. And so one of the things that really jumped out to me about your YouTube channel is the competitive programming. So like a lot of listeners to my show are trying to get better, trying to get their next internship and trying to get better at interviewing. And so my question kind of is around, should students get into competitive programming to study for interviews?
Well, it does help, but if you're targeting interviews or if you're preparing very specifically for interviews, then competitive programming may be overkill, but it does help. So if I can take an example, it would be like aiming for fitness by running marathons. It's not necessary, but It's exciting. So what happens is you have a clear goal, which is a rating, and you can always see it going up. While interview preparation sites are more about you complete a set of questions and then there's some diversity involved over there, but there's no springing up a surprise, or there's no real challenge that if you don't get this done, then you don't do well in the contest. So a lot of people find it to be a nice way to, I wouldn't say trick themselves, but actually prepare themselves for interviews. And in India especially, this is becoming a trend that because the programming questions are very algorithmic. The interview questions are very algorithmic. They sort of over-prepare themselves to make sure that the competition is taken care of.
Right. Wow, that's pretty cool. Like, I worry when I see stuff like that because I watch people do competitive programming, and I tried to get into it once a little bit actually, and they're so good. And I'm like, I don't think I can compete against that. Like, if you know, I'm up against them in an interview, all things equal, and they're able to like slam out an interview question so easily. The only concern I kind of have about it is like, there's difference between like typing out a solution on your computer and also writing on a whiteboard. So that's the only like concern I have about studying for interviews using competitive programming.
Yes, there's also the fact that interviews are, yes, there's a specific question, you have to solve it. Computer programmers do have an advantage because they are very practiced at solving these questions. But there comes a point when your coding practice is also looked into. So your variable naming, the way that you're breaking tasks into functions, what is the API design that you have there. This happens even more when you get more and more senior. So for higher roles, there's a expectation that the code quality will be good and the person will be able to communicate their ideas in a very effective way. That's the reason why they start asking them much harder questions also, like design, and in some cases they start actually asking you about the prices that will be involved if you buy a Cassandra cluster. So that comes at much senior roles. But yeah, you're right, it is sort of scary when you look at people like Gennady who are pumping out solutions in maybe 3 minutes, 4 minutes.
And yeah,
there's us mortals who are all looking at the question and trying to figure out what do they actually mean? What is that part of this?
Yeah.
I remember the first time actually I logged into this computer programming site, I couldn't understand what's going on there. And I left. The next time I logged in was 2 years later. So it's never too late, so to speak, for starting computer programming. But there's also a sort of practical aspect to it that, you know, is it really necessary? And I don't think so. I don't think a software engineer needs to know about computer programming, because all of my senior engineers who were awesome at designing and programming systems went necessarily into contests.
Right. You know, I love the analogy you made to it being like running a marathon. You know, like that's kind of the over preparation aspect to it. But let's say, like, for example, that I really do just want to improve my skills and it does sound fun, the competition aspect. Where should I start?
You could start with Codeforces. That's a site which is, the best bit about that for me is that it's reliable. So if you have set aside some time, and you know, you scheduled this time for interview prep, the Code Forces site will definitely work. It's not going to crash because of high load or something. The questions there are also, you know, new enough, I should say. It's not like it's, you're going to get completely different topics every time that you log in, but the questions will be challenging. So you'll have to think at least. While some of the programming sites, unfortunately, are inclined to take topics as difficulty levels. What happens with that is you have a particular set of data structures which is considered hard. And if a person knows about them already, it's no longer hard because you know how to apply them. But there'll be 10 questions, 5 of them will be on, let's say, dynamic programming, 3 will be on segment trees, and then it gets ridiculously hard in terms of prerequisite, not in terms of application. So,
right.
But Code Forces, therefore, is my favorite site. There's other sites also. You can try Code Chef. You can try Hacker Earth, although they aren't too much in computer programming now. Hacker Rank is another site. There's quite a few sites.
Right. Yeah, you know, so I, like I said, I did look into competitive programming a little bit, you know, probably up to a year ago now. And it was kind of like the thing with you. Like, I logged into Code Forces and I was like, what the hell is going on here? I don't think this is for me. And I like closed the web browser. And so I don't know if you saw in our little shared note thing here that I sent to you, but I actually created a Chrome extension called Leet Party, which is just intended to be like you can compete against your friends when you leet code. And so for me, that kind of like lowered the barrier. There's one thing to like compete against strangers on the internet, and then competing against your own friends, I think added just this dynamic to it that actually made me really excited to try it. So I just finished that actually, just launched it like a week ago. So that was a really exciting kind of way to get into competitive programming, I think.
I think it's going to be very useful. A lot of people, it's like the bounce rate on your web page. It's something that people measure, but for computer programming, it's really, really high. People know that it is useful. It might be fun also, but what the hell? You come on the first page and you get this complete jargon, which is, you know, you need to do this, click over here, then go over there, try to solve the problem. And then the problem is like, chef likes to eat cakes. You go, where's the computer programming problem, you know? So
yeah.
I think if you can lower the barrier, not the quality, but the barrier of solving questions, it's going to be really, really useful. There's definitely a product opportunity for this. A lot of interview preparation sites are trying to bridge that gap between computer programming and where students are right now in the syllabus. So it's an interesting time to be in, and definitely products like yours, like Leet Party, can actually help bridge that gap in a very nice way. No one gets to know whether you're screwing up or not, except your friends.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, maybe someday, I was gonna say maybe someday we'll, you and I can take a crack at this and go head to head, but then I realized that you're probably gonna just destroy me, seeing as I've never really done competitive programming. But
I have not done it for the past, what, 3 or 4 years now, so there's,
oh really?
Yeah, it can swing both ways.
Right. Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, I haven't even looked at like Leet Code besides making this extension, because I've got a full time job now, and when you have a full time job, you don't end up going on Leet Code very much.
That's good. I'm sure your HR department will be happy knowing that. Yes.
Yeah. After watching this video, don't worry. So another thing I noticed about your channel that I thought was really cool is the design questions that you have on there. So I've been in programming interviews before where they ask like a design question, and I'm always kind of just like making it up as you go. Like I'm kind of, I look at the problem and I'm like, I've never done a question like this before outside of an interview. Like, where do you actually study your design questions?
Well, the start was, it was a mixture. So the design in my company, the first company that I was working for, DirectI, was inspired by lots of other people, and they had faced problems themselves which they had solved, or they saw how people are solving those problems. So for example, the most common problem you face when you're building a distributed system is balancing the load on all these systems. So you want to send the same number of requests to every computer that you have bought, because you're anyway spending on the rent for that computer. You have some space which is holding that computer. You're spending the electricity, you're keeping it on. So really it doesn't make sense to run one computer at 80% and the others at 20%. So you want that to be distributed so that in case the 80% guy goes down, it's not going to be a massive load shift onto the other two guys.
Right.
So these are problems that engineers have been solving since the past few decades now. And the problems have gotten more complex because now we are going for distributed problems, like distributed systems, since the internet came in and the network connection speeds became really nice. And what happens with young engineers is that they join their job and they're good at algorithms, they're good at problem solving, they have all the potential. But if you can make their basics stronger, if you can improve the foundations of their engineering, like problem solving skills, I should say, then you have a good engineer right at the start. So that was the idea of actually getting into system design questions, which talk about real life problems. And where do you apply it was, you know, something that you were asking. We do apply it at work. Design is something that I have applied at work a lot. Computer programming is something I don't think I've ever applied at work. There's been little bit of algorithms here and there, which have helped me understand why this system is behaving in a certain way, but never that you sit down and you solve this, this segment tree problem, you know, never. Dynamic programming, it's not consciously happened. It may have happened because we designed the system in such a way, but never that we sat down and said, hey, here's a dynamic programming problem. System design, it's happened a lot. Every time we actually sit down to build a system, at a certain point in time, you have to go to your senior engineer and get the, you know, get the permission to actually go ahead and code this out. You need design there.
Yeah. So I've noticed a bunch of episodes on your channel will be like the architectural design for Tinder or WhatsApp and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And where do you, like, are you just kind of approximating what you think it looks like, or is that actually how it works? And how do you find out what those designs look like?
It is a mixture. There's almost all of it is speculation. So if you are told this as an engineer, design this problem. So the context of all of those episodes is you're in an interview and you're asked to design something similar to Tinder or something similar to WhatsApp. And you come up with a design which is something which is respectable in 45 minutes of the interview time. The real problem cannot be solved this way. It's far more complex. There's going to be small systems within that huge diagram that you drew, which are going to be super complex themselves. So when I was working at Uber, you could actually draw the system architecture of Uber. And you could take a tiny piece of it and you would have an entire team working on that for more than a year. So it's super complex that way. So what they want to look at is when given a large problem, what are the things that this person considers and how do they actually bring it down to something that can be coded down the lane, you know? Another thing is that this design is actually going to be shared between product managers, project managers, your engineers across the board, so that they can just look at the design and say, hey, this is making sense or this doesn't make sense. They don't need to look at the code because that's very tedious and it's nearly impossible. I mean, you can't run through code like that. So this helps. And that's the reason why they expect engineers to be able to first abstract out problems and show them as block diagrams.
Right.
But it's useful.
That's awesome. That is really cool. I definitely have to study some more system design questions, because like you said, it is really useful at work. Like I find myself, it's one thing to get in the door at a big company, and then what you'll find is a lot of your annual reviews or any review really, like half year review, whatever it is, they always talk about like, yeah, but how much are you contributing to design discussions? Like that's one of the really big, you know, factors when you're at your job, is just how are you contributing to the design? And when you walk first in the door, it's not a big deal. But as you go through the ranks, like you said, when you get to like higher ranks, like senior, like it's really, really important. It's probably like a large part of your job. So definitely it's really important.
Absolutely. I had a senior of mine who once told me that, Gaurav, you do contribute to the design. And I said, that's not true. I don't know about design. So this was 2 years into the job. And he said, what you're doing right now is contributing to the code design. So good coding practices, you actually take code and you break it into modules. That's what you're doing. So that's also part of a design. Once you start thinking in far more abstract terms, that time, of course, you'll be, you know, in the meeting room talking about, oh, we can apply a message queue over here. So yeah, that does help in the promotion space though, as you get more and more senior.
Definitely. So you're working at Uber. Like, how did you like Uber and why did you leave?
So yes, I heard you're working at Uber, so I was going to just correct you over there, but yeah.
No, you were working there though.
Yeah. So I liked it. I liked Uber quite a bit. The work culture was really nice. There's a lot of structure to Uber, which I think maybe startups you know would appreciate, because structure also gives performance to the employees, or should I say, it gives a path, a clear way in which you can just reach out to your manager and ask them for help when you need it. While unfortunately, in certain startup systems, especially when it becomes a big startup, that's like a grown-up baby. It's the ugliest thing that you can see. So you have these set of managers and set of senior engineers who you can always ask for advice. That's superb in Uber. Also, the problems that they are solving are pretty interesting. Like, some of the problems are super interesting, but they are in the US. So, but when you're talking about scale, yes, it's pretty intense at Uber. Engineering wise, of course, the amount of data that you're going to be processing and you know, doing something with that. So you'll be writing also some results. That's pretty interesting. Why did I leave? Two reasons mainly. One is the YouTube channel, and two, I want to make a product on system design, which is something I'm still working on. So a part of it, maybe the first 33% has been released till now. So yeah, the system design course that I have is a product. And I realized that if I'm going to be putting time into it, like seriously looking to make it a good product, it's going to take all my time.
Right.
So yeah, I had to then make a choice.
And that system design course, what, like, where will that be available for people?
So it's on interviewready.io. If you type that on your browser, then it automatically changes to getinterviewready.io. That's an engineering marvel that I have. It's just a DNS. But
Nice.
yeah, if you go there, then you can buy the course. It's on system design. It has high-level design interviews, something that we were talking about right now, which is block diagrams and stuff. And there's also low-level design interviews, which is very interesting, because here's the thing, right? As a fresher, when we join, we talk about code mainly. Then you head to block-level diagrams. That's high-level design. And then you head to low-level design, which is you have a problem statement, you expand on one particular part of it, let's say load balancing. And before you write the code, you actually design the code using block diagrams and using class diagrams and stuff like that. So one of the problems talks about that right now. Unfortunately, it's taking me a long time, but the second one is nearly out. It'll talk about multi-threading and stuff. Should be fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't wait to try that out and learn more about that.
Should be fun, yes.
And so, you know, this YouTube channel, it's really big. It seems to have really taken off. And my question is, like, how did it get started? Like, why did you start it in the first place?
So I think the inspiration came from writing blogs on complex programming problems. A lot of people found it useful. And now that I look back and I also look into myself, I realize that I really, really like people thanking me. There's something about that which drives me, you know, forward all the time. So
Right.
this is something pretty interesting. And thanking me not for thanking me for being intelligent is something I should say. There's a lot of ego inside me, I'm sure, but I'm trying to harness that power for good, you know.
Right.
There's the fact that if I solve a problem in a novel way, I would definitely like people to know about it, and they would thank me for actually putting this out there. And also the explanation, one important thing about any explanation to me is that the comprehension should be high when a person reads it, and it should take them less time. So when I used to write these posts, which used to be what, 150 words or something, I would reread them about 15 or 16 times just to make sure that the grammar is right. If there's any image I can add in, then let's do that. Stuff like that, which made the posts pretty popular. And it helps also when you talk about the things that you have done, you understand them far better. The action helps, but reiterating what you've done is almost like doing the action again. So that inspired me to move to the video content. And initially, I wouldn't put my face forward. I used to screen record and then talk about algorithms and stuff. Later on, I realized that you need a board sometimes to kind of draw things out, and your expressions talk along with your gestures. Although half of the time my gestures are something like this, it does help to put the message across easier. That's the reason why I started videos. And there was a big gap in between when I thought I have put enough content out there. But about a year later, I realized that no, that's not the case. There's always something more that you can talk about.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great, man. So I've only got like one or two questions here left. And before I get to them, I'll say thank you for sharing all of this really intelligent information on the podcast.
No, it's my pleasure. Of course, it's like I said, it's something that drives me forward.
So like, what is one of the most common questions that you get from students?
The recent questions I'm getting are, how do I move to product-based companies? So I don't know if that's the case in the US, but in India, you have majorly a set of service-based companies, which is, they take contracts from the larger companies where you go out and work for them for a few years. And usually the work that you do for these companies is very back-end sort of work. So it's not fun, or not as much fun as, let's say, building a new product.
So right.
That's a question I get a lot, and has to do more with, it's a very complicated question. And sometimes I feel like the answers are also a little demoralizing because the opportunities are less. Of course, you can prepare well, but you'll have to really work hard and get ready for a struggle. Maybe I can twist it around and say, hey, here's an adventure. You have to struggle a lot and submit your resume everywhere. Try your level best, learn new things. You're going to be a different person when you actually enter this company, and it will be worth it. That is absolutely true. I truly believe that. But I also have this feeling that sometimes luck plays an important role when it comes to getting your resume shortlisted in these companies.
Right.
It has a lot to do with the connections that you already have there. So that's unfortunate, but it's also it's the truth. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. You know, one of the reasons I asked that question, and I'm glad that you brought up the product versus service distinction, is because I have seen that question before. But for me, like, you know, I went to school in Canada. I've never known that distinction. Like, it's never been a question in this kind of, you know, in that area where I was from. So I felt so, you know, unprepared to answer it. So I'm glad that, you know, if anyone asks me this again, I'll say, hey, check out this episode. You know, there's some really great advice in there.
Yes. It's tough to take a person's question and also, you know, try to guess the context that they have behind the question. So the weird thing is, if you give me too much context, I'll be bored reading that. So I probably won't answer. That's strange. So when a person comes and asks me a question, I go like, there's not enough context here. And, oh, well, it's too big a question. So there's probably a sweet spot somewhere in between. And as much as you can, ask your friends, ask your seniors, ask your professors. But if the answer is not coming from the internet also, then go forward and ask a question to me or anybody on LinkedIn. I mean, Jason's also there. Jason, I'm sure you have had a diverse set of experiences which are different from mine. So if you have any questions for, I'm sure, about Canada, then you can definitely ask Jason.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. So yeah, I'm definitely a resource for people. And I do take questions quite a lot. I've done a few resume critiques and stuff too. And you start to see patterns between like questions and resumes and stuff, right?
Yes.
So Last question. This one's a little bit like easier. It's a bit of a low ball there for you to end off on. What are some of your hobbies?
Chess is one of my hobbies. It's right here.
Oh, I see it. Yeah, nice.
So this is a, you know, fancy set. I don't play with this because I can't sometimes tell the difference between a rook and some weird shape that they have here. But I do like playing chess. It's gone down recently because I've seen that I sort of get addicted to playing that. I can play that for hours and I have other tasks to be done, like making a course. So
right.
That is one thing that I like doing. Apart from that, I like reading. There's been the past 6 months, which have been very productive when it comes to reading, because you're at home. So audiobooks help while I'm reading. So I listen to them at 2x, at double the speed, and I'm just, you know, running through and I feel like Superman or something. I'm grasping so much.
I know, you know what? When I discovered the 2x feature in like almost everything I listen to, like YouTube videos and, you know, even podcasts or audio, like when I discovered the 2x feature, it changed my life. It's like I can take in twice as much content now. So
definitely. Happens when you see, especially a 1 hour long video and you go, I have half an hour.
Yeah. Exactly. And sometimes it feels like when I'm watching a video, you know, they're going too slow in the beginning. So I skip a bunch and then it's like what they did too much. Like now I have no idea what happened, but I don't want to watch all the slow bits. So, you know, that 2x feature is perfect.
Absolutely. Especially in the MIT lectures, that's something that's super important. So they start really slow and they go really nice. And then suddenly they're talking about heavy light decomposition and you go, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Where's the bridge there?
Yes. At 2x, it's good.
All right. Well, that is all the questions I have. I just want to thank you one more time, Gaurav, for being on the show and really direct people towards your YouTube channel for everything, competitive programming and system design questions. Those are going to be really great for helping you get interviews and slamming those interviews when you do. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for having me again.
I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. I know that I definitely learned something. And please don't forget, reach out, techintern.com. We can set up a coffee chat or a resume critique. Thanks so much. I'll see you next Monday.